Welcome to King's Health Partners Haematology Primary Care Podcast Series, KHP Heme Pearls. I'm Dr. Bushra Yusuf, GP Partner at St Mary Cray Practice. Today's podcast will be focusing on paraproteins and the common queries primary care colleagues have around this topic. I'm delighted to be joined by Dr. Kate Bailey, who's a consultant haematologist at King's College Hospital. Thank you for joining me today, Kate. And I'll go straight into our first question, if that's okay.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Bushra, and thank you for inviting me today.
So let's start with the basic question. What is a myeloma screen?
So a myeloma screen is, well, it's partly what it says on the tin. The purpose is to screen for underlying plasma cell disorders, in particular myeloma, but it also covers for lymphomas as well. And it includes two specialist tests. So the first is the serum protein electrophoresis with immunoglobulins. And the purpose of that is it's looking for a paraprotein or a monoclonal band. And the second specialist test are the serum-free light chains. And both those tests, essentially what we're looking for is a sign of clonality. And the myeloma cells or abnormal lymphoma cells can produce a paraprotein, which essentially is an antibody protein. It is not normal to have a paraprotein in the blood. And one thing that's very useful about the serum protein electrophoresis reading is it also gives us an idea of the size of the paraprotein. And that reflects how big the clone of abnormal cells is. So if you have a lot of paraprotein, certainly if it starts going above 15 grams per litre, then we could be much more suspicious that there's something sinister going on. If we have a very small paraprotein, particularly if it's too small for the lab to quantify, then we could be much less worried and it's much more likely to be a benign paraprotein, something like a monoclonal gammopathy of undetermined significance, otherwise known as MGUS. Along with those specialist tests, I would recommend doing a full blood count, a bone profile to look at the calcium in particular, which can be raised in myeloma, and also urea and electrolytes, because myeloma can cause renal dysfunction as well.
Sure. Thanks, Kate. So, historically, we used to do a lot of Benz-Jones proteins. What are your thoughts on that? Is that still part of the myeloma screen?
So Benz-Jones proteins are really the equivalent of serum-free light chains, which have taken over as our test of choice, because Benz-Jones proteins are light chains in the urine. Now we can do it as a blood test. It's much more convenient, and also it's much more easy to monitor over time. Certainly at King's, we really quite rarely do Benz-Jones proteins. We rely on the serum-free light chains.
Sure. Okay. When do you think GPs should be requesting myeloma screening? Does it really need to be done for every high ESR level, renal impairment, osteoporosis?
So, I think at the end of the day, it's a clinical judgment. We know that myeloma is very rare in young people, but if you've got someone who's over 50 and they have another abnormality which is suggestive of that possibility of myeloma, then it is certainly worth doing a myeloma screen.
Mm-hmm. Sure, thank you. Now, could you give any top tips on how we can interpret protein electrophoresis and immunoglobulins? I know certainly as a GP, we're seeing more and more results come through.
Sure. So I think the main thing with the serum protein electrophoresis is looking for the monoclonal band or paraprotein, which is basically the same thing. We sometimes get referrals with polyclonal increases. That's not a plasma cell dyscrasia. That's going to be caused by other things such as infection or inflammation. One thing that I know people struggle with, and it's not just in primary care, some of our secondary care physicians have difficulty interpreting the serum-free light chains. And I think because whereas any monoclonal band is abnormal, actually you can have slightly raised serum-free light chains in a normal person. So for example, if you've got renal impairment, then you will get abnormal serum free light chains, but they'll only be mildly abnormal. What we're looking for is a disparity between the kappa and the lambda. And a way of quickly seeing that is to look at the ratio. So that will be quoted on the form, the serum free light chain ratio. And if that's above 10, then that would warrant a referral to us in the plasma cell dysplasia clinic. And the other thing that's then difficult is if the lambda is predominant, then you'll get a fraction number rather than a whole number, which can be more difficult to interpret. What I would recommend is that you take the lambda milligrams per liter and divide it by the kappa, and that will give you an easier number to interpret. And again, if that's greater than 10, that would warrant a referral.
Sure. And I mean, when would we do a 2-week wait referral as opposed to a routine referral to hematology?
One thing I would say is that the 2-week wait forms are usually quite prescriptive about that, and do look at them. So they tend to specify how big the paraprotein should be before you would refer on, and also how abnormal the serum free light chains are, but also they take the clinical picture into consideration. So if, for example, you had an IgG kappa paraprotein of 7 or 8, which normally you might think is most likely to be an MGUS, but also you've got someone with unexplained renal failure, or someone with unexplained high calcium, or someone who's got bone pain, then that would warrant a 2-week wait. Whereas if you've got someone who's got a paraprotein that's too small to quantify, or just very slightly abnormal serum free light chains with a ratio of 2 or 3, then that wouldn't warrant a 2-week wait referral, but a routine, we could see as a routine referral, or simply repeat the test after a couple of months and see what happens.
Sure. Okay. And if the immunoglobulins are slightly out of range, but there's no band, do they warrant a referral to hematology?
So no. We're really looking for that clonal process. So we're really looking for a monoclonal band or a paraprotein. So if it's a polyclonal increase, that's more likely to be caused by something else, such as infection or inflammation.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Okay. And what is the difference between oligoclonal and polyclonal immunoglobulin?
So that's really on a similar note. So you can get oligoclonal, where you get sort of tiny little clones that are then producing what's picked up as these bands, but actually they're associated with, again, infection or inflammation. So I think oligoclonal bands, the classic is the oligoclonal bands you get in the CSF in patients with multiple sclerosis, rather than anything to do with a hematological cancer.
Okay, so best to just clinically assess and...
Yeah, absolutely. And think about other causes. And certainly, you know, we're happy to sort of answer queries in for individual cases, because obviously different cases are different.
Sure. Okay. Thank you so much for listening. And thank you, Kate, for answering the questions. We hope you've learned something along the way with us. Please spread the word to your colleagues by sharing this podcast. We'd really appreciate if you could please complete the poll, and to let us know what you thought of the podcast, if you have any unanswered questions on the topic, and to let us know if there were any topics you'd like us to focus on for future podcasts. We really look forward to developing this Haematology Primary Care podcast series with your input, so please let us know if you'd like to get involved in future podcasts.
Thank you. Thank you, Bushra, and thank you for inviting me.
Thank you for joining.